Welcome to the Jeffers Brief, only on Contra Radio Network.
And good evening, John Jeffers here at the Jeffers Brief, only on Contra Radio Network, coming to you tonight on April 18th. I do believe tomorrow is Patriots Day, so happy Patriots Day to you. My fellow Patriots, keep the faith. It's just beginning. And we, in the immortal words of a particular American admiral, said, I have not yet begun to fight. All right. For those of you not aren't sure what's going on, I'm here to help you. Here to give you the information you need to make intelligent decisions. And tonight we're going to do a prepper item and we're going to do a patriot item. Before we do that, want to let you know, articles are now posted on the CRN website. That's ContraRadioNetwork.us. ContraRadioNetwork.us. We have posted a few articles. Hope you enjoy them. Feel free to rate them, comment on them, whatever. Always like to hear from all of you. All right. You know, sometimes we wonder how much, you know, if I have to bug out, how much is too much? Is there such a thing as too much to pack, move, you know, that kind of thing. Well, according to Final Prepper, Alexander Kane wrote a pretty good article. It's called Pack Like You Are Never Coming Home Again. Well, let's find out, shall we? You know, he says that, what if this shit hits the fan when you are away from your home? What if you are on the big family vacation down at the Grand Canyon and the global economy finally tanks like a drunken toddler going down the stairs on roller skates? You could be hundreds, maybe thousands of miles from your home. Your supplies and everything you have been preparing for, all of your careful planning, saving, and prioritizing would be wasted if you couldn't get back home to the comparative safety of your home or your retreat. Now, this is something I think about whenever I travel out of town, so I've developed a couple of processes to help me, and my main priority is getting back home. The steps I take are different, and my plans need to be adjusted depending on how I am traveling and who I'm traveling with. Naturally, the distance and duration of my travel has an impact on my plans as well. And don't tell me, because, you know, let's face it, we're coming up on the summertime. It's, you know, y'all got the vacations, road trips, we all got plans and all that stuff. Don't tell me you're a prepper and you've never thought about this. Because if you've never thought about it, you need to start paying more attention to Contra Radio Network, because you are not thinking things through clearly. So let's talk distance. If I have to travel less than 500 miles away from home, I try to drive. Why drive 500 miles? You can simply hop on a plane, you ask? Well, several reasons. One, I dislike flying. No, let me say, I hate flying with a blind passion. I used to like flying too, as a personal note, and now it's like, I feel like head of cattle. How many can we cram in a 757? Let me tell you something. That is the worst aircraft for passengers I've ever been on. It's a narrow body. It's terrible. And unfortunately, when I went to Hawaii a few years back, flying out of Los Angeles to Honolulu on a 757, like 5 hours. Oh, for the love of God, will it ever end? Will we ever get there? And just as I was contemplating, you know, cutting my wrist and bleeding out slowly, we flew over Pearl Harbor. And it's like, thank God we're here. Oh, so yeah. And now they want to, now airlines have got the A-OK to have semi-standing seats so they can cram more people into the planes. What joy that is. I mean, it's bad enough the width of an airline seat in economy is 18 inches. my freaking lawnmower cuts a wider swath than what I can sit on the airlines. So it's like, you know, yeah. Flying? Not so much. Not if I don't have to. It's just terrible. So when you fly anywhere now, unless you're going from one major city to another major city, you'll most likely be on multiple flights. The airlines do this so they can combine travelers on bigger jets, but it makes a simple trip for the average person a pain in the backside. If you have one of these multiple hop nightmares, you could face delays on one leg that makes you late for your connecting flight. There are a few things more infuriating than running with your luggage across a crowded airport only to arrive at your next gate, which, by the way, that next gate will be the farthest possible gate on the planet from where you are. I'm serious. And watch the plane you were supposed to be on slowly pulling away. No, they won't come back for you either. Add to this security delays, which means you need to get to the airport earlier, parking, shuttles, luggage hassles. Not to mention the ultimate insult is they grope you and your family. I do still fly, but with certain considerations, and it isn't my first choice. So if you're flying, you have much less you can do in the way of taking major preparations with you. Less than 500 miles, I like to drive because my trip starts the minute I leave my driveway. I can also take firearms, extra food, water, and other items I may need if I have to get back home. You can still carry firearms on a plane, but in a car, there's almost zero hassle. Yes, you can carry firearms on a plane. All right, alone or with companions? If I'm traveling alone, I definitely carry fewer items in my survival kit. Actually, I don't take a true survival kit that you would recognize. I always have my EDC for you new people. That's everyday carry, which consists of knife, multi-tool, handkerchief, water, etc. I also carry concealed if the state I am traveling to honors my permit. I don't worry about carrying too much extra food because I'm not as concerned with feeding myself as I would be if I had a hungry wife and kids with me. If I'm traveling with my family, I bring much more because I have more people to consider. Hunger at a minimum can seriously harm morale and is one of the easiest concerns to prepare for. So let's talk about it, shall we? Food. Traveling with the family. Our family always... What is that? Okay. Traveling with our family anyways involves food. There is something about a car trip that makes everyone hungry, so snacks are necessary just to get us to the next food stop. I think there is some chemical aroma that our car puts out that makes you hungry if you're in it for more than 20 minutes. It may be years worth of fries under the seats, you know, who knows. We make sure we have more than enough snacks for our trip for everyone in the car. These don't seem like much, but the caloric count of the snacks we have in the cooler would more than make up for a day's worth of eating. Well, the bottom line is, when you're in the car, you get bored. What do you do when you get bored? You look for something to do? Oh, I'll eat. All right, water. Depending on the time of year, we adjust the amount of water we carry in our car, regardless of the outside temperature. Everyone has a full Nalgene bottle before we leave the house. We also have enough bottled water to last us for 2 days. This isn't enough to take showers or cook with, but we would die of dehydration. Now, if you are driving through the desert, we pack more. I have also packed my backpacking water filters on occasion and always carry water purification tablets in my get-home bag. Now, if you have a travel trailer, like I do, I got a 34-foot travel trailer, before I leave, I fill up the water tank. I do. And it's gallons and gallons and gallons. No, seriously. It's roughly 25 gallons of water I could put in the travel trailer. And, of course, the wife says, well, why are you putting that in there? It's just going to add weight. It's going to do this to the gas mileage. And I said, because when you travel with water, guess what? We can stop anywhere. We can cook. We can wash our hands, clean up. Whatever we got to do, we've got water we could use immediately. So, yeah. First aid. I found an excellent combat medic bag at a gun show last year for $80, and this is always in the car with us on long trips. This has more supplies than I would ever use on a standard trip, hopefully ever. But I have this for a couple of reasons. First, if we are in a serious car accident or witness a serious car accident, I would be able to immediately assist with first aid, provided I wasn't the one injured, and possibly save a life. Stop there. I'm going to back up here. You need to do this as part of your training, as part of your education. You need to learn how to administer first aid to yourself. You do. When I was with the sheriff's office, we had to train with our first aid kits, which were not laughable, but it's because, you know, we always knew if there was a situation like that, we were gonna, you know, rescue the ambulance. You know, they're gonna be there in minutes. But for example, one of the things we used to train for is, I've been shot in my strong arm. For me, I'm a righty, so I had to learn how to put the Israeli combat bandage on my strong arm with my weak arm, weak hand, left hand. That's why you train. When you learn to shoot, you learn to shoot both hand, both strong and weak hand. Yes. So make that part of your training. Group trainers out there, group leaders, make sure you add this to your curriculum. Learning how to use first aid on yourself. And I'm going to tell you something. If you think it's easy putting on, say, a tourniquet or a Israeli combat bandage to save your own life, and you can't use your strong arm, you need to learn how to do it. It's awkward at first, but the more you do it, the easier it becomes, because you start to think lefty. For me, I have to think lefty instead of righty. So something to think about. Back to it. The second reason is, if we had a grid down scenario, I would like to have my first aid bag on steroids with me and not at my house. In this bag, I have all the normal items and some major blood stoppers. Eventually, my plan is to add an IV. This bag is really to treat and stabilize major trauma, immobilize injuries, and stop blood loss. I don't think there is one Band-Aid in the whole bag. I also have a simpler first aid kit that we bring with us on day trips. This is augmented with survival blankets, but the combat lifesaver is left in the car most of the time. Got it? All right. Weather. You should have a pretty decent idea of the weather where you're going to encounter along your trip and your destination. With the prevalence of weather websites and smartphone apps, there is no reason except for laziness to not know how to pack. If there is a snowstorm plan for where you are taking a vacation, hurricanes in the summer can wreck all of your vacation plans, but these are the big ticket items that receive a lot of notice on the news. What if there is no hurricane or blizzard, but you don't pack a jacket and the temperatures are lower than you expect? You have to plan clothing that could keep you alive. At a minimum, I try to pack like I'm not coming home. I bring too many clothes, but I'm usually prepared for any weather. I have a rain blocker and a fleece if I'm going anywhere where the forecast is rain or coolers. Hey, tell you what, take a break. Let's go here. On the CRN apparel page, we have winter coats. We have raincoats. We have fleece available for sale. And the best part is, it's got the CRN logo on it. Choose your size, choose your colors. By all means, check it out. All right. Even at the beach, nice could be cool. Could I live without fleece if I only had to go back out, you know, go back inside? Sure. But what if I'm stuck outside and that fleece is the only thing keeping me warm overnight? My little trick is to have and wear clothes that would keep me alive if I didn't have a car or a warm house to go to. This usually involves headgear, gloves, which never get used, but it's nice to have them as a backup. You can never be sure. Let's talk about fuel. Having all the items you need to survive a collapse is great, but if you don't have enough fuel to get where you're going, it could be a much less pleasant trip. If you are driving, never let your tank get below half full. This way your vehicle can get you closer to home regardless of what happens during your trip. Having the vehicle you are in maintained is a no-brainer also. Which, by the way, my truck is in the shop doing just that. You know, a side note. For the longest time, I thought, what the hell's wrong? What is up with this truck? This truck gets really crappy gas mileage. There is something really wrong. And I've been thinking about it. You know, the problem is the spark plugs for my truck take iridiums. And I can't buy 8 spark plugs. I need 16, 2 for each cylinder. And iridiums are expensive. So after spending between $200 to $300 for 16 iridium spark plugs, took it in there today. I took the truck in yesterday. Went to go check it out today. Turns out, whoever had the truck before me had the wrong spark plugs in there. It's like, well, good God, what the hell? And then I found out there were some other things that were going wrong too. But I'm getting it all repaired. The maintenance has not been kept up when we got the vehicle, and now we're trying to figure out because of, it's a long story. But anyways, yeah, you got to have your maintenance up on your vehicles, guys. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. Let's talk firearms. Every trip I can, the firearms go with me. Why? Well, what if the shit hits the fan and you're hundreds of miles away from your AR, just like clothing? I imagine what it would be like if I had to shoot my way back home. It may sound paranoid, but I have several firearms with multiple magazines each and at least one rifle. In some cases, I have more than that. Again, all state and federal law should be obeyed. But I don't like being away from home without some serious firepower. Murphy's Law states that would be when I would need it. Now, all this is fine if you're driving, but what if you have to fly or you're traveling internationally? You can still travel with a lot of the items I mentioned above, but every situation is different. You may need to adjust your plans to your travel requirements. It may help you in the use, as I described, though, and if nothing else, it may help you prioritize when you're packing next time. If there is a case to be made for minimalisms and making do with less or using items differently, of course. The main point is be prepared. And if that means another suitcase, so be it. So what do you think? Is he right? I don't know. You tell me. You're the listeners. Feel free to comment. All right. For my Patriot friends. All right. Couple things. As you know, we've been keeping close eye. Sundance has been keeping close eye, and I want to pass this along to you. What's going on in the coup d'etat? Interesting information. As you know, Congress has sent criminal referral to Attorney General Jeff Sessions, who was really what I like to call the man missing in action. Christopher Wray, who happens to be the director of the FBI, who, again, another missing in action individual, and Prosecutor Huber, who we have yet to hear from, but I'm sure we're going to hear from him very shortly. Sundance has posted this, and I want to share it with you because it's as important for all you patriots and preppers out there and for all American citizens who love this republic. As for you liberals who hate America and hate everything it stands for, including the Fresno State professor, you know what? KMA and FOAD. If you're not sure what it means, email me, ContraRadio@live.com, ContraRadio@live.com. I will tell you what those mean. All right. According to Sundance, led by Representative Ron DeSantis, Congress has sent a criminal referral letter to Attorney General Jeff Sessions. By the way, I will post that letter on the CRN MeWe site, MeWe.com, to Attorney General Jeff. I'm still missing in action, Sessions. FBI Director Christopher, I don't know what the hell I'm doing, Ray, and Federal Prosecutor John Huber. The identified targets of the referral include former FBI Director James Comey, former Assistant FBI Director Andrew McCabe, former Attorney General Loretta Lynch, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, current FBI Agent Strzok, and current DOJ Attorney Lisa Page, who is a former Special Counsel to Andrew, I'm a liar and perjurer, McCabe. The identified reason for each of the referrals is outlined in the letter. However, the risk to James Comey is not simply contained within the letter, but also contained within the non-discussed fact that FBI Chief Legal Counsel James Baker is flipped. He's now a cooperated witness for Inspector General Horowitz and Huber.
Oh, no. I hate when that happens.
One of the lesser discussed aspects to the ongoing investigative overview is how a few key people with direct and specific knowledge of the events that took place within the FBI and DOJ activity remain inside the institutions as they are being investigated. And remember, that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing. Because, like I told you before, okay, and if you are not sure, they've been told, you will sit in this chair, you will not talk to anybody, and nobody is going to talk to you. That's because if they get fired, if they quit, they are not going to, shall we say, be interviewed by the Inspector General. But that's okay. Go ahead and quit. Because when that happens, that's when Federal Prosecutor Huber, you've just come into his jurisdiction.
Oh, no, there's no way out.
Now, those key DOJ and FBI officials have been removed from their position, yet remain inside with no identified or explained responsibility. I just did that for you. Sundance probably knows that, but it is what it is. So Peter Strzok, FBI, Lisa Page, the DOJ FBI attorney, Bruce Orr from DOJ, James Baker, I'm flipping now to save my own hide, FBI, are still employed. And so far as they are within the DOJ FBI system, it's more than highly likely they are being retained for their cooperation in exchange for some form of immunity. Maybe not. Other identified co-conspirators left their positions as soon as the IG discoveries began hitting the headlines in December of 2017 and January 2018. Those who quit include, but not limited to, James Comey's chief of staff, James Rybicki, he resigned. FBI Director of Communications, Michael Cortan, he resigned. DOJ National Security Division Assistant Attorney David Loftman, he resigned. Each of those officials was named and outlined within the Page Strzok text messages as a key participant, and quit as soon as the scope of the Internal Inspection Division, INSD, investigative material was identified by media. Now, prior to the IG, Internal Inspection Division release, other resignations were earlier. DOJ, National Security Division head Mary McCord in April 2017, and DOJ NSD head John Carlin, October 16th. Dana Bonte, the current FBI chief legal counsel, was inside Maine Justice and specifically inside the DOJ NSD apparatus the entire time of 2015, 16, and 17 political schemes were happening. Therefore, Bonte has the full scope of understanding and the dirt on Sally Yates, John Carlin, Mary McCord et al., and all the rest of them. Buente's understanding, obviously bolstered by the DOJ NSD Deputy Attorney Bruce Orr, who, not coincidentally, is also removed from position but still remains employed. Now, Mr. Buente's understanding of the DOJ National Security Division, NSD, activity and the sentiment of the small group toward him is represented by the actions they all took to try to diminish Buente during the transitional phase between the Obama and Trump administrations. However, regarding the current congressional criminal referral of James Comey, the key element of risk is FBI Chief Legal Counsel James, I'm flipping to save my ass, Baker. Baker was a central figure connecting the activity of both Comey and McCabe to the officials underneath that were carrying out the agenda. To repeat, James Baker was removed from his responsibilities and replaced by Buente, but he remains employed in some function within the FBI. That is, you'll sit here and say and do nothing. It's almost a guarantee Baker is only there because he's cooperating in exchange for a deal of some form. Yeah, here's the deal. We send you to federal prison as opposed to Guantanamo Bay. How's that? There's your deal. Lastly, the issue of James Comey's memos is a trending item, but there's an angle being missed by most. James Comey and Andrew McCabe both leaked to the media. The self-interested leaking by Andrew McCabe, clearly outlined in the recent IG report, originates with contradictory statements from McCabe's appointed lawyer at that time, Lisa Page. Now, the self-interested leaking by James Comey about his quote-unquote loyalty conversation with President Trump will likely surface with statements from Comey's chief legal counsel, James Baker. Now, there's a clear parallel, and James Baker is still inside the FBI. Here. All right? So there you have it. That's the update. Now, what I'm going to do is this. Let me see. How do I do this? I'm going to figure out how to do this. Just hold on here. Let's try that. Nope, I don't want to do that. No, that's wrong. Don't want to do it that way. Well, this kind of sucks. I know what I'll do. All right. Okay, very good. I'm going to post that letter of the Congressional Criminal Referral to the Department of Justice on the MeWe the CRNMeWe.com page. All right? Now, that's it for tonight. And stay with us because, like I said, this coup attempt, things come out every day, and it's going to come out faster and faster and more. So stay with me, and we will get through this together and see it through to the end. Patriots, be ready to go defend your president if need be. If need be. I know I am. I'm making plans for it. I'm John Jeffers here at the Jeffers Brief, only on Contra Radio Network, saying to you, my prepper and patriot friends, be safe, be alert, and be vigilant. Thank you for listening.